We had found the perfect spot.
Mara still doesn't know where it is, Opal said, smiling. The image of an awning of tree limbs and sun-dappled grass filled Opal's mind as the cool scent of moist earth reached my nose.
That's it.
I grabbed Opal's arm. Hold that place in your mind. Concentrate on it. She did as I asked. I closed my eyes and put myself into the memory. Blades of grass brushed my arms as I lay in the small hollow behind a row of overgrown bushes. The smell of sweet honeysuckles hung heavy in the fresh air. Dewdrops sparkled in the morning sunlight. Instinctively, I knew this place hid Tula's soul. Come on. I pulled Opal toward the keep, waving goodbye to Fisk. A guard stood outside Tula's door. He nodded to us as we went inside.
Shouldn't we wait for Fourth Magician and the others? Opal asked.
No time. I don't want to lose the image. I took one of Tula's hands and held my other out to Opal. Take my hand. Now I want you to imagine yourself in your hiding spot with Tula. Close your eyes and really concentrate. Can you do that? Opal nodded, her pale face drawn. I linked with Tula. The ghosts of her horrors still floated in the emptiness, but they seemed less tangible than before. Connecting with Opal, I followed the smell of honeysuckles and dew through Tula's mind. The ghosts thickened with a sudden fury, flying at me, blocking my passage. The air pressed and clung like molasses. I pushed past them only to be ensnared in a row of thorn bushes. My clothing snagged on branches, and the barbs dug into my skin.
Go away, Tula called. I don't want to come back.
Your family misses you, I said. Vines began to wrap around my arms and waist, anchoring me.
Go away.
I showed her Opal's memories of what her family suffered when Tula had disappeared.
The thorny bushes thinned a bit.
Through their branches, I spotted Tula curled up in her childhood hiding spot.
I can't face them, Tula said.
Your family?
Yes. I've done things. Terrible things so he wouldn't hurt me.
Tula shuddered.
But he hurt me anyway.
The vines climbed up my arms and circled my neck.
Your family still loves you.
They won't. He'll tell them what I did. They'll be disgusted. I was his slave, but I didn't try hard enough for him. I couldn't get anything right. I didn't even die for him.
I controlled my anger. My desire to slaughter the beast would have to wait. Tula, he is the disgusting one. He is the one who should die. Your family knows what he did to your body. They only want you back. She drew her body into a tighter ball.
What do you know? You know nothing about what I went through. Go away.
You assume too much. I choked out as the vines around my throat squeezed tight. I struggled to breathe.
Could I face my own horrors again?
To find this monster, I would. I opened my mind to hers and showed her Rayad, his delight in torturing me, my willingness to make him happy so he wouldn't harm me, and the night I slit his throat after he had raped me.
Tula peeked at me through her arms. The vines lessened the pressure.
You killed your torturer. Mine is still out there, waiting.
I tried again. Then he is free to make someone else his slave. What if Opal is his next victim? Tula jumped up in horror.
No,
she screamed.
I linked Opal's mind with ours. For a moment, Opal stood stunned, blinking in surprise.
Then she ran to Tula and hugged her.
Together they wept.
The vines withdrew, and the bushes died away. But this was just the beginning. The grassy hollow soon faded, and Tula's ghosts hovered around us.
There are too many, Tula said in defeat. I will never be rid of them.
I drew my bow from its holder on my back and broke it into three pieces. Handing one to Tula and the other to Opal, I said, You're not alone. We'll fight together. The ghosts attacked. They were tenacious and quick. I swung at them over and over until my arms felt like lead. A few of Tula's horrors disappeared, others shrank, but some seemed to grow as they fought. My energy drained at an alarming pace. I felt my bow become stuck inside one of the ghosts. The spirit expanded and consumed me. I screamed as the pain of being whipped racked my body.
You're weak. Tell me you'll obey and I'll stop, a voice whispered in my ear.
No. Near panic, I reached out for help. A powerful presence formed and handed me a full-size bow that pulsed with energy. Strength returned to me, and I beat at the horror until it fled. We had repelled the attack, but I could see that Tula's ghosts prepared for another. Tula, this is merely the first battle in an ongoing war. It will take time and effort to be free of your fears, but you'll have plenty of help from your family. Are you coming with us? I asked. She bit her lip, gazing at the piece of bow in her hands. Opal added her bow to Tula's. Tula clutched them both close to her chest.
Yes, I'll come.
Tula's mind filled with memories of her life. Vertigo twirled in my stomach as I broke my mental links with Tula and Opal. Relief descended, and I sank into blackness. When I came to my senses, I felt hard stone against my back. For the third time, I had collapsed on Tula's floor. This time, I had no hope of moving. My energy was completely depleted. After a while, I noticed that someone gripped my hands. Strong fingers wrapped around mine, encompassing them with warmth. With effort, I opened my eyes to see who held me. Then I closed them tight. I must still be asleep. But after hearing Iris's insistent calls, I looked again. And there sat my brother, holding my hands and sharing his energy with me. Chapter 17. Weariness lined Leif's face.
You're in big trouble, he said.
His words didn't seem malicious, just factual. And as expected, past his shoulders, I saw Iris, Rose, Hayes, and Bane all frowning at me. Leif released my hands, but remained on the floor beside me. Rose eyed him, her displeasure evident in the tight twist of her lips.
You should have let her die, she scolded him. One less magician to taint our land with her incredible stupidity.
A little too harsh, Rose, Bane said, though I agree about the stupidity. Child, why did you try that alone? Bane asked.
I couldn't even speak in my defense, for I hadn't the energy to form words, let alone try and explain myself.
Cocky and stupid, Rose said for me. Since she cured Tula of her physical injuries, she must have believed she was an all-powerful magician and could do anything. The fool will probably be asking to take the master-level test next.
Rose snorted with disgust.
Maybe she'll feel differently after we assign her to the first year's barracks. There she can learn the basics of magic while scrubbing the floors, like every new student.
I glanced at Iris. Rose's punishment sounded horrible. Iris said nothing. Disapproval pulsed off her. I braced for an outburst. Instead, Opal called,
Tula's awake!
I closed my eyes in relief as everyone focused on Tula. When I opened my eyes, the magicians had all disappeared from my view.
You're still headstrong and reckless, an out-of-control strangler, Fig, Leif said. I guess Ixia didn't change everything about you.
He stood on shaking legs, and I watched him join the others by Tula's bedside. I puzzled over his comment. Good or bad? I couldn't decide. But then Rose's harsh voice jarred me out of my reflection. She bombarded Tula with questions about her attacker, but Tula wouldn't answer. I cringed, knowing that Tula wasn't up to Rose's interrogation. Thank fate, Hayes intervened.
Give her some time, he said.
There is no time, Rose replied.
A thin, raspy voice asked,
Who are all these people? Where's Yelena? I can't see her.
She's here, Opal said. She's just exhausted from helping you, Tuli.
Hayes, get some assistance and go dump the fool girl into another room, Rose instructed. She's done enough damage for one day.
When Hayes moved to obey, Tula said,
No, you leave. All of you. I won't tell you anything. Yelena stays with me. I'll talk to her.
A murmur of irritation and discussion rumbled through the magicians before Rose agreed with reluctance to bring a bed in for me. Hayes and Iris hoisted me off the floor and dropped me without fanfare onto the mattress. Iris still hadn't said a word, and her silence scared me.
"Child," Bane said to Tula, "I understand your fear. You have awakened to a room full of strangers."
He then introduced everyone in the room.
"First Magician and Leaf are the ones you need to tell about your abduction. They will find your kidnapper."
Tula pulled the sheet up to her chin.
"I'll tell Yelena. No one else. She'll take care of him."
Rose's harsh laughter scraped in my ears.
"She can't even talk. If your attacker walked into this room, he would kill you both."
She shook her head in disbelief.
"You're not thinking clearly. I'll be back in the morning, and you will talk to me. Come, Leaf."
Rose strode out the door with Leaf on her heels. Hayes shooed everyone else out. As the door closed, I heard Bane tell Iris to assign an extra guard for the evening. A good idea.
If Gol came in, I couldn't prevent him from carrying out his promises to torture me.
Apprehension about being so helpless crawled along my spine. A similar situation that haunted Tula. One of her many ghosts was being at the mercy of another. Her promise to tell me everything weighed on my mind. I had just gotten rid of my own ghost. Though, I hated to admit, Rayad still retained some power. Whenever I had doubts, he seemed to enjoy visiting my nightmares. Or did he cause them? Or did I invite him? To distract myself from such troublesome thoughts, I tried to muster some energy to talk to Tula, but exhaustion claimed me instead, and I sank into a deep, dreamless sleep. I felt a little better in the morning, but had only enough strength to sit up in bed. At least I could ask Tula how she felt. She closed her eyes. Pointing to her temple, she said,
"Come."
I sighed with regret. "I don't have the energy to link our minds, Tula."
"Perhaps I can help," Leaf said from the doorway.
"No, go away."
Tula shielded her face with her arms.
"If you don't talk to me, First Magician will come and take the information she needs from you," Leaf explained.
Tula peeked out at me in confusion. "It won't be pleasant," I said. "It's almost as bad as what your attacker did to you. I know." Leaf averted his eyes. I hoped he felt guilty. Studying him closer, I wondered why he had aided me the day before. What had happened to his smirk? Where was his derision and condescension? I realized I barely knew this man. Not wanting to guess his motives anymore, I demanded, "Why did you help me?" A scowl gripped his face, but with a sigh, he smoothed his features, shuddering his emotions.
"Mother would kill me if I had let you die," he said.
He turned to Tula, but I refused to let him get away with such a flippant response. "What's the real reason?" Hatred blazed in Leaf's jade eyes, but a second later his posture softened, as if someone had blown out a candle. He whispered,
"I couldn't bear to do nothing and lose you again."
Then, his mental defenses dropped, and I heard his thoughts.
"I still hate you."
His trust surprised me, though his petulant comment failed to concern me. An emotion, even hatred, was better than apathy. Could this be a first step in bridging the distance between us?
"What did he say?" Tula asked.
"He wants to help you," I said. "Tula, this is my brother. Without him, we wouldn't have gotten you back. If you want me to find your attacker, I'll need his strength."
"But he'll see. He'll know about..."
Tula squeezed her arms together.
"I already know," Leaf said.
He pulled Tula's arms away from her face with a gentleness that amazed me. I thought back to my mother's comments about Leaf's magic. She had said he helped with crimes, sensing a person's guilt and history. Now, as I watched him with Tula, I wanted to know more about him and how he used his magic.
"We need to find him and stop him from hurting another girl," Leaf explained.
She swallowed and bit her lip before nodding. Leaf stood between our beds, took Tula's hand, and reached for mine.
I reclined on the mattress and grabbed his hand.
Then, using his energy, I formed a mental link with Tula.
In her mind, the two of us stood by a gray stone furnace.
Leaf's power roared around us like the fire under the kiln.
I was here, putting coal into the furnace. It was close to midnight when...
She clutched her apron. Black soot streaked the white fabric.
A dark cloth wrapped around my face. Before I could scream, I felt a sharp stab in my arm. Then...
Tula stopped speaking. On our mental stage, she stepped toward me. I hugged her trembling body, and within the space of a breath, I became Tula, witnessing my own abduction. Numbness spread from the stab wound, freezing my muscles. Dizziness was the only indication I'd been moved.
Time passed.
When the cloth was removed from my face, I was lying inside a tent. Unable to move, I stared up at a lean man with short brown hair that was streaked with gold. He wore only a red mask. Strange crimson symbols had been painted all over his sand-colored skin. He held four wooden stakes, rope, and a mallet. Feeling returned to my limbs.
Tula, no, I can't, I said in my mind.
I knew what horrors threatened to come. I lacked the strength to endure them with her right now.
Just show him to me.
She froze the image of the man so I could study the symbols. The circular patterns resided within bigger patterns of animals. Triangles traced down his smooth arms and legs. Though thin, he radiated power. A complete stranger to Tula, everything about him seemed foreign to her. Even the harsh way he pronounced her name, emphasizing the la, sounded odd. But he knew her. Knew the names of her sisters and parents. Knew how they melted sand, working it into glass. Then, in a whirl of sound and color, she showed me the man at different times. She wasn't permitted to leave the tent, but whenever he entered or left, Tula caught a glimpse of the outside, a tease of freedom. Long, thick grass filled the whole view. When he came to her, he always wore a mask, letting the numbness in her body wear off before beating or raping her, letting her feel the pain he applied with seeming reverence. After he finished the torture, he took a thorn and scratched her skin. Puzzled at first by this action, Tula soon learned to dread and to crave the ointment he would rub into the thorn's bleeding gash. It was the numbing lotion that would paralyze her, taking away all her pain and any chance she might have to escape. The ointment, though, had a strong, crisp scent, similar to the sharp smell of alcohol mixed with a citrus perfume. The aroma remained around me like a poisonous fog as Leaf's energy waned. He broke the magical connection to Tula.
That smell, Leaf said as he perched on the edge of my bed. I couldn't get a good whiff. All my efforts went into keeping you and Tula connected.
It's horrible, Tula said, shuddering. I shall never forget it.
What about those symbols? I asked Leaf. Did you recognize them?
Not really, though there are some clans that use symbols for rituals.
Rituals?
Dread coiled in my stomach.
Wedding ceremonies and naming rituals.
Leaf scowled in concentration.
Thousands of years ago, magicians used to perform intricate rituals. They believed that magical power came from a deity, and if they tattooed their bodies and showed the proper respect, they would be granted greater power. Now we know better. I've seen some symbols painted on faces and hands before, but not like the ones on Tula's attacker.
Leaf pulled his black hair back behind his head with both hands. With his elbows jutting out past his face, his posture seemed so familiar. I felt like I could transport back to a time when my concerns only focused on what game to play next. The faint childhood memory dissolved with my efforts to concentrate on it.
Tula covered her eyes, silent tears spilling down her cheeks.
Reliving the kidnapping and the torment had to be grueling.
Get some rest, Leaf told her. I'll come back later. Perhaps Second Magician will know something about those symbols.
He left the room.
The morning's events had drained my own small supply of energy. I knew words would give no comfort to Tula, so I was relieved when Opal came in. Seeing her sister's concern, Tula sobbed loudly,
and Opal crawled into the bed with her, held Tula close, and rocked her like a baby. I fell asleep listening to Tula purge her body of the masked man's poison.
We had visitors throughout the rest of the day. Cahill came, smelling of the barn.
How's Kiki? I asked, missing her.
Even though my connection with her remained, I couldn't produce enough power to hear her thoughts.
A little agitated. All the horses are. The stable master's been in one of his tempers. Horses take their cues from people's emotions. If a rider is nervous, then the horse will be too.
Cahill shook his head.
I still have a hard time believing you can communicate with them. Guess today is just one of those days where my notions are proven wrong.
Why's that?
I thought you were an overconfident braggart when you said you could help Tula. But you did it.
Cahill studied me.
I conceded the overconfidence title.
My rescue of Commander Ambrose's soul had seemed easy in comparison to Tula's,
but I had forgotten that Iris had been with me in the commander's room, and it had been his superior fighting skills and determination that had gotten us free of his demons.
You almost killed yourself saving Tula, though, Cahill said. Was it worth the risk to prove me wrong again?
My motivations weren't selfish, I snapped at him.
I wanted to help her. I understand what she's been through, and I knew she needed me. Once I had an idea about how I could find her, I didn't stop to think. I just reacted.
And the danger to yourself never entered your mind?
Not this time.
I sighed at his aghast expression.
You have put yourself in danger for others before?
I was the commander's food taster. This was common knowledge, unlike my role in stopping Brazel.
Cahill nodded.
A perfect position to overhear the commander's plans. He used you as a shield. You should want to help overthrow him. Why do you hold such loyalty for him?
Frustration roughened his voice.
Because of my position, I saw through his reputation. I witnessed kindness and a deep concern for his people. He didn't abuse his power,
and while he is far from perfect,
he always stayed faithful to his beliefs. Reliable and true to his word, you never had to guess at hidden meanings or suspect duplicity from him.
His stubbornness refused to soften.
You've been brainwashed, Yelena. Hopefully, you'll regain some sense after living in Citia for a while.
Cahill left without waiting for a reply. Our conversation had drained me. I drifted in and out of an uneasy sleep the rest of that afternoon. The masked man invaded my dreams, hunting me through a thick jungle. Toward evening, Dax Greenblade surged into the room, energizing the air.
You look like hell, he said to me in a low voice.
Tula and Opal had fallen asleep in Tula's narrow bed. Gee, Dax, don't coat it with honey. Tell me what you really think, I said. He covered his mouth to mute his laughter.
I figured I'd hit you while you were down, because once you hear the rumors that have been flying through the campus like bare feet on hot sand, your ego will think it's a compliment.
In a grand gesture, Dax swept his arms into the air.
You have become a legend.
A legend? Me?
Disbelief colored my voice.
A scary legend, he amended, but a legend all the same.
Come on, how gullible do you think I am?
Simple enough to think you can find someone's consciousness alone.
Dax waved a hand over my bed.
Although it's not so stupid if this was an attempt to get out of class. But if you see your fellow students scurrying to get out of your way, now you know why. Here comes Yelena, the all-powerful soul finder.
I threw my pillow at Dax. His magic brushed my skin as the pillow veered to the right and struck the wall with a soft thump before sliding to the floor. I glanced at the girls. They appeared to be asleep.
Now you're exaggerating, I said.
Can you blame me? Cursed with the ability to read and speak archaic languages, Master Bane has me translating ancient history. Very dry and dull.
Dax retrieved my pillow and even fluffed it before returning it to me. When Leaf entered the room carrying a large square box, Dax leaned close to me and whispered,
"Speaking of dull."
I suppressed a chuckle. Dax left as Leaf began to unpack small brown vials. The clink of glass woke Tula and Opal. Tula eyed the bottles with obvious alarm.
"What are those?" I asked Leaf.
"Scent vials," he said. "Each one contains a specific odor. Mother and father helped me make these. Smells trigger memories, which aid me in finding criminals. But I figured I could use this kid as a start in determining the ointment that Tula's attacker used.
Interested, Tula tried to sit up.
Opal got off the bed to help her.
Leaf rummaged through his collection of about 30 vials until he had lined up 10 of them.
We'll try these first.
He uncorked one and passed it under my nose.
Breathe normally.
I wrinkled my nose and sneezed. No, that's awful.
A small smile touched Leaf's face as he put that vial away.
Leaf? Tula asked. What about me?
He hesitated. You've done so much already. I didn't want to exhaust you.
I want to help, too. Better than lying here doing nothing.
All right.
He had us sniff 3 more vials. Tula and I each smelled different ones, and then we took a break for dinner.
Too many scents will give you a headache, and you won't be able to tell the difference between them after a while, he explained.
Leaf spent the evening with us. My interest began to wane, but he kept at it even when he neared the bottom of the box.
I was on the edge of sleep when a sharp odor jolted me. Leaf held an uncorked bottle.
Tula cowered in her bed, her hands raised as though she tried to deflect a blow. Leaf squinted in confusion.
That's it, I cried. Can't you smell it?
He passed the vial under his nose, breathing in the pungent scent. Then he shoved the cork back in, flipped the bottle over, and read the label. He stared at me in shock.
It makes perfect sense. His mouth opened in horror.
What? I demanded. Tell me.
It's curare. When he saw my confusion, he continued, comes from a vine that grows in the Ilias jungle. It paralyzes the muscles. It's great for numbing toothaches and for relieving minor pain. To freeze a whole body, the medicine would have to be very concentrated.
Leaf's eyes flashed in dismay. Why are you so upset? I asked. Now you know what it is. Isn't that good?
Curare was rediscovered just last year. Only a handful of Zoltanas know about its properties. Our clan likes to know everything about a substance before selling it to others.
Understanding flooded my mind. Leaf believed that the red-painted man could be from our clan. Who found the curare? I asked.
Still upset, Leaf turned the vial in his hands. Father, he said. And the only person I can think of who has the skills to concentrate the curare enough to paralyze a whole body is Mother.
Audible Inc. and Harlequin present Magic Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman.
Chapter 18. I sat up in bed. Leaf, you don't really believe.
I couldn't bring myself to conjecture aloud.
To say that Esau and Pearl, our parents, might have some connection to this horrid murderer.
Leaf shook his head. No, but someone close to them, perhaps.
Another dreadful thought came to mind. Are they in danger?
I don't know.
Leaf began to pack his scent vials into their box.
I need to talk to our clan leader. Somehow, the curare must have been stolen. That one of our clan is...
Seeming lost for words, Leaf banged the box's top down.
Compromised? Saying we have a spy sounds too dramatic even for me.
Leaf gave me a rueful grin.
I doubt our leader will even believe me.
He grabbed his kit and rushed from the room. Tula, who had remained quiet during our conversation, asked,
Could Ferda?
She swallowed.
Could my attacker be from the Zoltana clan?
Ferda? Is that his name?
She covered her face with a hand.
No, that's just what I named him. I hid that from you. I was embarrassed.
She stopped and took a deep breath, glancing at her sister. Opal yawned and said she needed to get some sleep. She kissed Tula on the cheek and pulled the covers up to Tula's chin before leaving. After a few moments of silence, I said, You don't have to explain.
I want to. Talking helps.
Ferda is short for Ferdalance, a poisonous viper that hunts for prey by seeking heat. We used to get them in our factory all the time. They were drawn to the kilns. One killed my uncle. Anytime one of us would go out to the factory, my mother would say, "Be careful, don't let Ferda get you." My older sister and I used to scare Opal by telling her Ferda was coming for her.
Tula made a small sound as tears tracked down her face.
"I have to apologize to Opal for being so mean. It's funny,"
she choked out.
"I was the one taken by Ferda, but if I'd had a choice, I would have rather been bitten by the real snake."
I couldn't find any words of comfort for Tula.
Later that night, Bane arrived. He carried a lantern, and Dax, laden with a large leather-covered book and rolls of paper, followed him into the room. Yet another roll of paper was tucked under Bane's arm. He lit the lanterns in the room until the air blazed with candlelight. Bane wore the same purple robe he had worn the day before. Without preamble, he spread the paper across my bed. My stomach clenched when I looked at the scroll. The symbols I had seen tattooed on Ferda's body covered the parchment. Bane watched my reaction closely.
"These, then, are the right symbols?"
I nodded. "Where?"
Bane took the book from Dax, and for once, the young man's face held a serious expression.
"This ancient text written in the Ifi language tells of magic symbols from long ago. It reports that these symbols were so powerful that they could not be drawn in the book, for to do so would call the power. But fortunate for us, they describe them in detail. And fortunate too, Dax was able to translate the Ifi language into these."
Bane gestured to the paper.
"That's some progress," I said.
Dax flashed a smile.
"My talents are finally being used for a good cause."
Bane gave Dax a stern look. Dax sobered.
"The order of the symbols is very important," Bane explained, "for they weave a story. If you can tell us where they were on the killer's body, we might be able to discern what motivates him."
I studied the sheet, trying to remember where Ferda had painted the markings on his body.
"There are some patterns on him that aren't on this paper," I said. "Here," Tula said. Her eyes were closed. Even though her arm trembled, she held out her right hand. "I know them by heart."
Bane handed her the paper as Dax put his rolls on the floor. Unrolling one, he began to sketch an outline of a man on the sheet with a slender piece of charcoal. Tula stared at the symbols for a moment, then she recited their order. Starting with Ferda's left shoulder, she worked her way across his body to his right shoulder, then continued left to right like lines of words in a book. When Tula came to a symbol that wasn't on Bane's sheet, I drew it on a piece of scrap paper for Dax. Even though my drawings looked clumsy compared to his, he was able to duplicate my efforts on his paper. Tula stuttered in embarrassment when she reached Ferda's groin. Bane squeezed her hand and made a comment about how the man must have suffered for his art. A single chuckle burst from Tula. By her expression, I knew the brief laugh had surprised her. I suppressed a smile. Tula had started on the long road of recovery. Tula had memorized the symbols on her attacker's back. I cringed, remembering that she had spent almost 2 weeks as his prisoner. She also recalled other things about him: the scars on his ankles, the size of his hands, the red dirt under his fingernails, the shape and soft fabric of his red mask, and his ears.
"Why his ears?" Bane asked.
Tula shut her eyes and, even though her voice quavered, explained that each time he had staked her to the ground and thrust deep inside her, he turned his head to avoid looking into her eyes. To block out the pain, Tula focused on his ear. The first time he raped her, Tula bit him on the right ear. She recalled feeling a moment of satisfaction when the hot metallic taste of his blood filled her mouth.
"A tiny victory for me," Tula said,
then shuddered so fiercely her bed shook.
"I never did it again."
Dax, who had been drawing Tula's every description from his spot on the floor, smoothed his horrified expression before giving her his sketch. After some minor corrections, Tula handed the paper to Bane.
"That's him," she said.
The effort had sapped so much of her strength that Tula fell asleep before Dax could gather his supplies. I touched Bane's sleeve. Can I ask you something? The magician glanced at his apprentice.
I'll wait for you in your tower, Dax said to him.
He left.
You can always ask. No need to get permission, child.
I shook my head at the endearment. With only a bit of my strength returning, I felt ancient. I had no energy to correct him, though I doubt it would do me any good. He tended to call everyone child, even Iris, and she was twice my age. Iris hasn't come to visit. Is she still angry with me?
I would not use the word angry. Furious or livid comes closer to the truth.
My face must have reflected my terror, because Bane laid a soothing hand over mine.
You must remember that you are her student. Your actions reflect her skills as a teacher. What you did with Tula was extremely dangerous. You could have killed Tula, Opal, Leaf, and yourself. You did not consult Iris or seek her help, relying solely on yourself.
I opened my mouth to defend myself, but Bane raised a forestalling hand.
A skill I am sure you learned in Ixia. No one to help you, no one to trust. You did what you had to do to survive. Am I not correct?
Bane didn't wait for my reply.
But you are not in the north anymore. Here you have friends, colleagues, and others to guide you and to help you. Citia is very different from Ixia. No one person rules. We have a council that represents our people. We debate and decide together. This is something you need to learn, and Iris needs to teach you. When she understands why you acted as you did, she will not be so upset.
How long will that take? Bane smiled.
Not long. Iris is like the volcanoes in the Emerald Mountains. She might emit some steam, spit some lava, but she is quick to cool. She probably would have visited today, but a messenger arrived from Ixia this afternoon.
A messenger? I tried to get out of bed, but my legs wouldn't hold my weight. I ended up on the floor. Bane tisked at me, calling Hayes to help me into bed. When Hayes left, I asked again,
What messenger? Tell me. Council business.
The magician made a shooing motion with his hand as if the entire topic bored him. Something about an Ixian ambassador and his retinue requesting permission to visit Citia.
An Ixian ambassador coming here?
I mulled over the implications as Bane, anxious to translate the killer's tattoos, hastened to leave the room.
Bane, I called as he opened the door. When are the Ixians coming?
I do not know. I am sure Iris will tell you when she comes.
When?
At this point, I felt if was the better word. Waiting for her became intolerable. I hated just lying there, being so helpless. Iris must have sensed my agitation.
Yelena, I heard her voice in my mind. Relax. Conserve your strength.
But I need
to get a good night's sleep. Or I shall tell you nothing. Understand?
Her firm tone left me no chance to argue.
Yes, sir.
I tried to settle my mind. Instead of obsessing about when the northern delegation would arrive, I thought about who Commander Ambrose would send as his ambassador. He wouldn't risk one of his generals. Sending an aide seemed more logical. Valak would be my choice, but the Sissians wouldn't trust him, and he would be in too much danger. Cahill and his men would try to kill him for assassinating the former king of Ixia. But would they succeed? That would depend on how many attacked him at one time. I imagined Valak countering strikes with his typical grace and speed, but huge green leaves began to obscure the image in my mind. The leaves blocked my view, and soon vegetation surrounded me. I fought my way through the dense jungle, searching for Valak. My pace increased as the awareness of being chased pressed on my back. Glancing over my shoulder, I spotted a long tan snake with red markings slithering after me. Catching glimpses of Valak through the trees, I shouted and called to him for help. But thick vines from the jungle had ensnared his torso and legs. He hacked at them with his sword, but the vines continued to wrap around him until they covered his arms as well. I pushed toward him, but a sharp pinch in my thigh stopped me. The viper had wrapped around my leg.
His fangs dripped curare. Blood welled from the two small holes in my pants. The drug spread through my body. I screamed until the poison froze my voice.
Yelena, wake up.
Someone shook my shoulder hard.
It's just a dream. Come on, wake up.
I blinked at Leif. A frown anchored his face. His short black hair stuck out at odd angles, and he had dark smudges under his eyes. I glanced at Tula. Propped up on one elbow, she looked at me with concern in her brown eyes.
Is Valak in trouble? She asked me.
Leif's gaze jumped to Tula. Why are you asking about him? He demanded.
Yelena was trying to help him when she was bitten by the snake.
You saw it? I asked. She nodded.
I dream of the snake every night, but Valak's new. He must be from your dreams.
Leif turned back to me. You know him?
I closed my mouth. Choosing my words with care, I said, as the commander's food taster, I saw him every day.
Leif blinked. The red flush of annoyance drained from his face. I know nothing about your life in Ixia, he said.
That was entirely your choice.
I don't think I could stand the extra guilt.
Leif turned his face away, staring at the wall.
You shouldn't feel any guilt now that you know I was kidnapped.
There was nothing you could do, I said, but he refused to meet my questioning gaze.
Isn't she your sister?
Tula asked into the silence. She wrinkled her nose, squinting in confusion. It's a long, complicated story, I said. Tula settled her head on the pillow and then squirmed around under the covers as though she were seeking a more comfortable position.
We have plenty of time.
We have no time, Iris said from the doorway. Leif, are you ready?
Yes.
Iris took a step inside the room.
Then go help Cahill with the horses.
But I was going to...
Explain what is going on, I demanded, sitting up.
No time. Bane will fill you in.
Iris and Leif turned to leave. Fury bloomed in my chest. Without thought, I pulled power and directed it toward them.
Stop.
They both froze in place until I released them. I slumped in bed. My outburst had sapped what little strength I had. Iris returned to my bedside, an odd mixture of anger and admiration on her face.
Feeling better?
No.
Leif, go, Iris said. I'll catch up in a moment.
He shot me a rueful glance on his way out. Leif's way of saying goodbye, I guessed. Iris perched on the edge of my bed and pushed me back onto the pillow.
You'll never get better if you keep using magic.
I'm sorry. I just can't stand being so...
helpless. A wry smile bent Iris's mouth. It's your own fault. At least that's what Rose keeps telling me. She wants me to assign you to a season of kitchen duty as punishment for rescuing Tula.
She should be rewarded, not punished, Tula said.
Iris held her hand up.
Advice I won't be taking. In fact, I believe that your current situation is bad enough that you'll think twice next time you're tempted to use more magic than you can handle. And being stuck here while Cahill, Leif, and I travel to the Avibian Plains to visit the Sandseed Clan is sufficient punishment.
What happened? I asked.
Iris softened her voice, her words just louder than a whisper. Last night, Leif and I asked Bavol, the Zoltana's councilman, about the curare. It did come from your parents. They made a large batch and had it delivered to the Sandseed Clan.
My heart skipped a beat. Why?
According to Bavol, Esau had read about a substance that paralyzes muscles in a history book about the nomadic tribes of the Avibian Plains. So Esau traveled to the Sandseed Clan and found a healer named Gida, who knew a little about this substance. In the Sandseed Clan, information is orally passed down from one healer to the next, and sometimes knowledge is lost. Esau and Gida searched the jungle for the curare vine, and, once found, they had Pearl help them extract the drug. It's a time-consuming process, so Gida returned to the plains, and Esau promised to send him some curare as a gift for helping him.
Iris stood.
So now we are going to find out what Gida did with his curare, since Counselor Harun Sanseed didn't know.
I must come.
I struggled to sit up, but my arm refused to hold my weight. Iris watched me impassively. When I stopped, she asked, Why?
Because I know the killer. I've seen him in Tula's mind. He might be with the clan.
She shook her head. We have Dax's drawing, and Leaf caught a glimpse of the man when he helped you connect your mind to Tula's. Iris reached out and smoothed my hair from my face. Her hand felt cool against my hot skin.
Besides, you're not strong enough.
Stay. Rest. Grow strong again.
I have a great deal to teach you when I return.
She hesitated, then leaned over and kissed me on the forehead. My protests froze on my lips. My reason for being at the keep was to learn, and already I felt as if I had gone off course. But visiting the sand seeds could be an educational experience.
Why wasn't anything simple?
Iris reached the door when I remembered to ask her about the Ixian delegation. Pausing at the threshold, she said,
The council has agreed to a meeting. The messenger left this morning to deliver our reply to Ixia.
She shut the door, leaving me to ponder all that she had told me.
Ixia, Tula said with wonder, do you think Valak will escape the vines and come with the delegation?
Tula, that was a nightmare.
But it seemed so real, she insisted.
Bad dreams are ghosts of our fears and worries, haunting us while we sleep.
I doubt Valak is in trouble.
My thoughts, though, lingered on the image of Valak trapped.
It had seemed real.
I gritted my teeth in frustration and impatience. Iris had been right. Lying here unable to do anything was far worse than scrubbing the kitchen.
Taking some deep breaths, I calmed my mind, cleansing out my worries and irritation.
I focused on my last night with Valak in Ixia, a cherished memory.
I must have drifted off to sleep because I felt Valak's presence.
A strong cloud of energy surrounded me.
You need help, love? He asked in my dream.
I need you. I need love. I need energy. I need you.
His regret pulsed in my heart.
I can't come. You already have my love. But I can give you my strength.
No, you'll be helpless for days.
The image of Valak tangled in vines leaped into my mind.
I'll be fine. The Paua twins are with me. They'll protect me.
Valak showed me an image of Ari and Janko, my friends in Ixia, guarding his tent. They camped in the Snake Forest, participating in a military exercise. Before I could stop him, power washed over me, soaking into my body.
Good luck, love.
Valak,
I yelled out loud.
He disappeared. What was that? Tula asked.
A dream. But I felt rejuvenated. I stood on my now steady legs, marveling.
Tula stared. It wasn't a dream. I saw a light, and...
I made a sudden decision and bolted for the door. I have to go.
Where?
Tula demanded. To catch up with Iris. Chapter 19. The two men guarding our room jumped in surprise when I sprinted out the door. I raced toward the stable before my mind could slow me down with logic, but I arrived too late. The yard was empty. Kiki poked her head out of her stall.
Lavender Lady better?
Yes, much better.
I stroked her nose.
I missed the others. When did they leave?
Some chews of hay. We catch up.
I studied Kiki's blue eyes. She presented an interesting idea.
Even if I had caught up to Iris before they left, there was no guarantee that she would have let me go with them to the Avibian Plains. Kiki pawed the ground with impatience.
Go.
I thought fast. Perhaps it would be better if I followed Iris and Leaf to the plains, revealing myself only when we traveled too far for her to send me back to the keep. I need supplies, I told Kiki.
On the way to my room, I made a mental list of everything I would need. My backpack and bow, my switchblade, my cloak, some clothes and food. Money, perhaps. After gathering what I could from my room, I locked the door, turned to go, and bumped into Dax. Look who's vertical, he said, a wide smile spread across his lips. I don't know why I'm surprised. After all, you are a living legend.
Shaking my head, I said, Dax, I don't have time to exchange barbs with you.
Why?
I paused, realizing that taking off on my own would be yet another black mark against me. An Ixian decision. But getting information from the sand seeds was too important for me to worry about the consequences. I told Dax about my plans.
Can you tell Second Magician where I've gone? I don't want Bane combing the keep for me.
You're on the fast path to expulsion, Dax warned. I've lost count of points against you.
He paused, considering.
Doesn't matter now. How long of a head start do you want?
I glanced at the sky. Mid-afternoon. Till dark.
The timing still left Bane a slight chance to send someone to retrieve me, but I hoped he would wait until the morning.
Done. I'd wish you good luck, but I don't think it would help.
Why not?
My lady, you make your own luck.
Then he shooed me away.
Go.
I hurried to the kitchen and grabbed enough bread, cheese, and dried meat to last for 10 days. Captain Marek had said the Avibian Plains were vast, and it took 10 days to cross them. If the Sandseed clan lived on the far side, I would have enough food to reach them, and I hoped I could buy more for the return trip. With my thoughts focused on supplies, I raced toward the barn. As I approached, Kiki snorted in agitation, and I opened my mind to her.
Bad smell, she warned.
I spun in time to see Goal rush me. Before I could react, the point of his sword stopped mere inches from my stomach.
Going somewhere? He asked.
What are you doing here?
Little birdie told me you flew the coop. It wasn't hard to track you.
The guards outside Tula's room must have alerted Goal. I sighed. My distraction while collecting supplies had made me an easy target. Okay, Goal, let's make this quick. I took a step back and reached for my bow, but Goal moved forward. The point of his sword cut through my shirt and pricked my skin just as my hands found the smooth wood of my staff.
Freeze! He shouted.
I huffed more in annoyance than fear. I didn't have time for this. Too scared for a fair fight?
Ow!
The sword's tip jabbed into my stomach.
Drop your bow to the ground. Slowly, he ordered.
He nudged his sword tip deeper when I hesitated. In slow motion, I pulled my bow from its strap, keeping Goal's attention on me because out of the corner of my eye I saw Kiki open the latch on her stall's door with her teeth. The door thumped open. Goal turned his head at the noise. Kiki spun, aimed her hind legs. I scurried back a few paces. Not too hard, I told her.
Bad man.
She kicked him. Goal flew through the air and slammed against the pasture's wooden fence. Then he crumpled in a heap. When he didn't move, I approached and felt for a pulse. Still alive. I had mixed feelings about his survival. Would he ever give up? Or would he keep coming after me until he had caught me, or until I had killed him? Kiki interrupted my thoughts.
Go!
I retrieved her tack and began to saddle her. As I tightened the girth straps around her chest, I asked, Could you always open your door?
Yes. Fence, too.
Why don't you?
Hay sweet. Water fresh. Peppermints.
I laughed and made sure to take some mints from Cahill's supply, packing them into my bag. I hooked 5 feed bags and water bags for her onto the saddle, along with my own food and water skins. Too heavy? I asked. She looked at me with scorn.
No. Leave now. Topaz scent going.
I mounted. We left the magician's keep and headed through the citadel. Kiki stepped with care as she walked along the crowded streets of the market. I spotted Fisk, my beggar boy, carrying a huge package for a lady. He smiled and tried to wave. His clean black hair shone in the sun, and the hollow smudges under his eyes were gone. A beggar no longer. Fisk found a job. When we passed under the massive marble arches that marked the gateway of the citadel, Kiki picked up her pace, breaking into a gallop. The view sped past as we traveled along the main valley road that led from the citadel to the forest. Harvest activity buzzed in the fields to our right. On the left, the Avibian Plains flowed out to the horizon,
The colors of the tall grasses had transformed from the greens and blues of the hot season into reds, yellows, and oranges, as though someone had taken a giant paintbrush and swabbed large bands of color across the landscape. The plains appeared deserted, and I saw no signs of wildlife. Only the colors rippled in the wind. When Kiki turned to enter the plains, I spotted a faint trail cutting through the grass. The long blades rubbed against my legs and Kiki's stomach. Kiki relaxed her pace. I touched her mind. We were on the right path, and the strong scent of horses filled her nose. She picked out each one by their smell.
Silk. Topaz. Ruzalka.
Ruzalka.
Sadmans.
Confused at first, it took me a moment to realize Sadman was Kiki's name for leaf. From what I had gathered from Kiki, when a horse meets someone for the first time, their immediate impression becomes that person's horse name, and they relate it to other horses. Apparently, it doesn't change. To the horses, it made sense. They gave us names, just like we had given them names. Other horses? I asked.
No.
Other men?
No.
Surprised that Cahill hadn't taken some of his men with him, I wondered why. Cahill had skirted the plains on our trip to the Citadel, afraid of the sand seeds even when traveling with 12 men. I guess he felt safer having a master magician accompany him. Either that, or Iris had insisted he leave his watchdogs at the keep. As we advanced farther into the plains, I realized that the surrounding grassland hid many things. Despite appearing flat, the terrain rolled like a messy blanket. I looked back the way we had come and couldn't see the farmland. Clusters of gray rocks peppered the plains. An occasional tree rose up from the grass, and I glimpsed field mice and small animals darting away from Kiki's hooves. We passed a strange crimson-colored rock formation. White veined the single stone whose top tier loomed above my head. The thick, squarish profile of the structure reminded me of something. I scanned my memory and realized the rock resembled a human heart. The fact that I had recalled my lessons surprised me. Biology at Brazel's orphanage had been my least favorite subject. The teacher had delighted in making his students sick to their stomachs. When the light over the plains began to fade and the air chilled, the thought of spending a night in such an exposed place made me uneasy.
Catch up? Kiki asked. Are we close?
The pungent smell of horses mixed with a thin scent of smoke. Through Kiki's eyes, I could see a distant fire.
They stop.
I weighed my options. A night alone or the possibility of facing Iris's anger if I joined her. Not used to sitting in the saddle for more than an hour, my legs and back ached. I needed a break. Kiki, though, could travel much longer. Pulling power, I projected my awareness, feeling for the overall mood of the campsite. Cahill gripped the handle of his sword. The wide-open sky alarmed him. Leaf lounged on the ground, almost asleep. Iris!
Yelena!
Her outrage seared my mind. Decision made. Before she could demand an explanation, I showed her what had happened between Valak and me.
Impossible.
The word triggered a memory. You said the same thing when I reached out to Valak to help me against Rose's mental probing. Perhaps there is something connecting us that you haven't encountered?
Perhaps, she conceded.
Come, join us. It's too late to send you home. And you can't go back to the keep without me to help you against Rose's wrath. With that sobering thought, I told Kiki to find the campsite. She felt glad, though, when we reached Topaz. He grazed with the other horses near the camp. I removed Kiki's tack, rubbed her down, and made sure she had enough food and water. Reluctance and sore muscles made my movement slow. When I finally joined Iris in the small clearing where they had stopped for the night, she only asked me if I needed dinner. I glanced at the others. Leaf stirred a pot of soup cooking over the flames. He wore a neutral expression. Cahill's hand now hovered near his sword handle. He seemed more relaxed about the night sky. He grinned when he met my gaze. He was either glad about my arrival, or was anticipating the entertainment from the reprimand I was certain to receive from Iris.
Instead, Iris lectured Cahill and me on the proper way to interact with the Sandseed clan members.
"Respect of the elders is a must," she said. "All requests are to be made to the elders, but only after they invite us to speak. They don't trust outsiders and will watch for any signs of disregard or any indication that you are spying on them. So don't ask questions unless given permission and don't stare."
"Why would we stare?" I asked.
"They don't like to wear clothes. Some members will dress when outsiders are visiting, but others won't." Iris smiled ruefully. "Also, they have a few powerful magicians. They aren't keep trained, they teach their own. Although a few of their younger magicians have come to the keep, seeking to enhance their knowledge. Kangam was one of these, but he didn't stay at the keep for long."
Iris frowned. Unfortunately, I knew where he had gone from there. He changed his name to Mogkan and started kidnapping children, smuggling them into Ixia. Before Cahill could voice his questions about Mogkan, I asked Iris, "What about the Sandseed magicians that stay with the clan?"
"They call them story weavers," Iris explained. "They hold the clan's history. The Sandseeds believe their history is a living entity, like an invisible presence that surrounds them. Since the clan's story is always evolving, the story weavers guide the clan."
"How do they guide them?" Cahill asked with concern.
"They mediate disputes, help in decision-making. They show the clan members their past and aid them in avoiding the same mistakes. Very similar to what the master magicians do for the people of Citya."
"They soothe a troubled heart," Leif said, staring into the flames. "Or so they claim."
Then he stood abruptly.
"The soup's done. Who's hungry?"
We ate in silence. After we arranged sleeping areas for the evening, Iris informed us that we would be on the road for one more night before we reached the clan's dwellings. Cahill wanted to make a night watch schedule.
"I'll take the first shift," he offered.
Iris just looked at him.
"It makes sense," he said in his defense.
"Cahill, there is nothing to fear. And if trouble heads in our direction, I will wake you long before it arrives," Iris said.
I hid my smile as I watched Cahill pout.
I wrapped my cloak around me against the cold night air and lay on the soft, sandy ground of the clearing. I checked with Kiki. "Everything okay?
Grass sweet. Crunchy.
Bad smells?"
"No. Nice air. Home."
I remembered now that Kiki had been bred by the Sandseeds. "Nice to be home?"
I thought of Valak in the snake forest, and hoped he had regained some of his strength.
"Yes. Nicer with Lavender Lady. Peppermints?"
Hopeful. "In the morning," I promised. I gazed up at the night sky, watching the stars dance while waiting for sleep. Kiki's view of life sounded right. Good food, fresh water, an occasional sweet, and someone to care for. That's what everyone should have. A simplistic and unrealistic view, I knew, but it soothed me. My thoughts, though, drifted into strange dreams. I ran through the plains, searching for Kiki. The knee-high grass grew until it reached above my head and impeded my forward motion. I pushed through the sharp blades, trying and failing to find a way out. My foot snagged on something and I fell. When I rolled over, the grass transformed into a field of snakes and they began to wrap around my body. I struggled until they immobilized me.
"You belong with us," a snake hissed in my ear.
I jerked awake in the weak light of dawn. My ear tingled from the dream snake, and I shivered in the cold morning air, trying to shake off the horror of my nightmare.
Iris and the others milled around the small fire. We ate a breakfast of bread and cheese and saddled our horses. My muscles had stiffened during the night, and they protested each movement. By mid-morning, the sun warmed the land, and I shed my cloak, stuffing it into my backpack. As we traveled, the soft ground turned into hard stone, and the grasses thinned. Small sandstone outcroppings sprinkled the area. By lunch, the outcroppings rose higher than our heads, and I felt as if we rode inside a canyon. During a brief stop, I noticed streaks of red on a pair of sandstone pillars some distance away. Tula's attacker had something red under his fingernails, I told the others. Could it be from here?
It's possible, Iris agreed.
We should get a sample, Leaf said.
He rummaged in his pack until he found a short glass vial.
We need to keep going, Iris squinted at the sun. I want to find a campsite before dark.
Go. I'll catch up, Leaf said.
Yelena, help him. Make sure it's the color you remember, Iris ordered,
then turned to Cahill before he could voice the objections behind his frown.
Cahill, you stay with me. If Yelena can find us hours after we left the Citadel, she'll have no problem catching up today.
Iris and a still-scowling Cahill mounted their horses and headed toward the sun, while Leaf and I found a path to the pillars. They were farther away than I had thought. Then it took us longer than we had anticipated to collect a sample. The streaks turned out to be a layer of red clay. The exposed clay had hardened, and we chipped through it to reach the softer material underneath. We placed both the hard chips and soft clay into the vial. By the time we returned to our starting point, the sun hovered halfway to the horizon. Kiki found Topaz's trail, and we nudged the horses into a run. I felt unconcerned when the sky began to darken. Topaz's pungent scent filled Kiki's sensitive nose, which meant we were getting close. But when full dark descended and I could not see a fire, I began to worry. When the moon rose, I halted Kiki.
Are we lost? Leaf asked.
He had been following me without comment since we had discovered the trail. I could just make out his annoyed frown in the faint moonlight. No. Kiki says Topaz's scent is strong. Perhaps they decided to travel longer?
Can you reach Iris? Leaf asked.
Oh, snake spit! I forgot! I took a deep breath and gathered a string of power, chastising myself for failing to remember my magic again. I wondered when using magic would become instinctive. I felt a surprising rush of power. The source seemed concentrated in this area. Projecting my awareness, I searched the surrounding land. Nothing. Alarmed, I extended my reach, seeking further. Then I realized that my mind hadn't even touched field mice or any other creatures. I stopped in frustration. If I could connect to Valak in the Snake Forest, I should be able to find Iris. After all, her horse had just passed this way.
Topaz smell always strong, Kiki agreed.
Always?
Yes.
Well, Leaf asked with impatience.
Something's wrong. I can't find Iris.
I told him what Kiki had just said. But that's good, right?
There should have been a gradual buildup of scent from faint to sharp. Instead, it's been the same since we found their trail.
I turned in a circle. Magic pulsed in the air all around us.
Someone is trying to trick us.
Finally, a deep voice barked from the darkness.
Kiki and Rizalka reared in surprise, but a soothing strand of magic calmed them.
I pulled my bow and scanned the few faint shapes I could see in the weak light. Not very quick, are you? The voice taunted from my left.
I spun Kiki around in time to see a man coalesce out of a blue ray of moonlight. Tall enough to meet my gaze without having to look up, the naked man's skin was indigo and hairless. His bald head gleamed with sweat, and I could see strength coiled in his powerful muscles. But his round face held amusement, and I sensed no immediate threat from him. Pure magical energy emanated from him, so I thought he might be influencing my emotions. I drew my bow. Who are you, and what do you want? I demanded. Bright white teeth flashed as he smiled.
I am your story weaver.
Chapter 20. I glanced at Leaf. His alarmed expression had turned to fear. Color leaked from his face as he looked from me to the large, indigo-colored man. The man's painted skin and lack of clothes made me think of Tula's attacker, but his body was more muscular, and scars crisscrossed his arms and legs, but no tattoos. With my mental barrier in place, I held my bow ready, but the man stood relaxed.
I would be relaxed, too, if I had access to the amount of magical power within his control.
He had no need to move. He could kill us with a word. Which begged the question, why was he here?
What do you want? I asked.
Go away, Leif said to the man. You cause only trouble.
Your stories have tangled and knotted together, Storyweaver said. I am here as a guide to show you both how to untangle them.
Banish him, Leif told me. He has to obey you.
He does? That seemed rather easy.
If you wish me to leave, I will go. But you and your brother will not be allowed to enter our village. His twisted soul causes us pain, and you are linked to him.
I stared at the story weaver in confusion. His words didn't make sense. Friend or foe?
You said you were here to guide. Guide us where?
Banish him now, Leif yelled. He will deceive you. He's probably in league with Tula's kidnapper and is trying to delay us.
Your fear remains strong, Storyweaver said to Leif. You are not ready to face your story, preferring instead to surround yourself with knots. Someday, they will strangle you. Your choice was to decline our help, but your tangles threaten to squeeze the life out of your sister. This must be corrected.
Extending his hand to me, he said, You are ready. Leave Kiki, and come with me. Where?
To see your story.
How? Why?
Storyweaver refused to answer.
He radiated calm patience as if he could stand there with his arm extended all night, waiting.
Kiki looked back at me.
Go with Moonman, she urged. Hungry. Tired. Want topaz.
Smell? Bad? I asked.
Hard road, but Lavender Lady strong. Go.
I returned my bow to its holder and dismounted.
Yelena, no! Leif cried.
He clutched Rosalka's reins tight to his chest. I paused in shock. That's the first time you've called me by my name. Now you care what happens to me?
Sorry, it's too late in the game for that to work.
Frankly, I don't want to deal with your troubles. I have enough of my own. And we have to find Tula's attacker before he takes another. So it's imperative that we meet with the clan elders.
If this is what I need to do, then so be it. I shrugged.
Besides, Kiki told me to go.
And you would listen to a horse instead of your brother?
Until now, my brother has refused to acknowledge any connection with me since I have arrived in Citya. I trust Kiki.
Leif snorted in exasperation.
You spent your life in Ixia. You know nothing of these sand seeds.
I learned who to trust.
A horse. You're a fool.
He shook his head. There was no sense telling him about how I had trusted an assassin, a magician who had tried to kill me twice, and two soldiers who had jumped me in the snake forest. All four now dear to my heart.
When will I be back? I asked Storyweaver.
With the sun's first ray.
I unsaddled Kiki and gave her a quick rub down while she ate some oats. Then I exchanged her feed bag for water. She drained it, and I placed the empty sacks near her tack. Apprehension about this strange trip began to crawl along my stomach. Wait for me? I asked Kiki.
She snorted and whacked me with her tail, moving away to search for some sweet grass to graze on.
Ask a dull-witted question.
I met Leaf's stony gaze for a moment, then walked over to Storyweaver. He hadn't moved. Kiki had called him Moonman. Before I took his hand, I asked, What's your name?
Moonman will do.
I studied his colored skin.
Why indigo?
A slow grin spread over his lips.
A cooling color to help soothe the fire between you and your brother.
Then a sheepish look.
It is my favorite.
I laid my hand in his. His palm felt like velvet. His warmth soaked into my bones and flowed up my arm. Magic shimmered, and the world around us melted.
I began to uncoil, feeling my body loosen and elongate as if it transformed into a string.
The individual strands that entwined within my life story began to separate and diverge, so I could see the many events that had formed my life. Some of my history was familiar,
I sought the pleasant memories, watching them as if I stood outside a window.
This is why you need me, Moon Man's voice floated through the scene before my eyes. You would stay here. My job is to guide you to the proper thread.
Memories blurred around me. I closed my eyes as the vision swirled. When the air settled once more, I opened them. I sat in the middle of a living area. Couches constructed of lianas and a glass-topped table surrounded me. A young boy, about 8 or 9 years old, reclined across from me on the wooden floor. He wore a pair of green short pants. With his hands behind his head and his elbows jutting out, he stared at the leaf-covered ceiling. About 10 bone dice littered the ground between us.
I'm bored, the boy said.
The appropriate response popped into my mind.
How about onesies? Or two through the skull?
I scooped up the dice and shook them.
Baby games, he said. Let's go down to the jungle floor and explore.
Leaf jumped to his feet.
I don't know. How about we go swinging with Nutty?
If you want to play silly baby games with Nutty, go ahead. I'm going to explore and probably make a big discovery. Maybe I'll find the cure to the rotting disease. I'll be famous. They'll probably elect me the next clan leader.
Not wanting to miss any important discoveries and ensuing fame, I agreed to go with him. With a quick call to our mother, we left our tree dwelling and climbed down the palm ladder into the cooler air of the jungle's floor. The soft ground felt spongy under my bare feet. I followed Leaf through the jungle, marveling at the youthful energy pumping through my 6-year-old body. A part of me knew the truth, that I was older and not really here, that this was a vision. Yet I found I didn't care, and I cartwheeled down the jungle path just for fun.
This is serious, Leaf scolded. We're explorers. We need to collect samples. You gather some leaves while I search for flower petals.
When he turned his back, I stuck my tongue out at him, but I grabbed some tree leaves all the same. A quick movement among the branches distracted me. I froze, scanning the area. Clinging to a sapling hung a young black-and-white Valmer. Brown eyes bulged from its small face, peering at me. I smiled and whistled at the creature. It scampered a bit higher, then turned its gaze back to mine and flicked its long tail. The animal wanted to play. I followed, copying its movements through the jungle. We climbed vines, swung, and dodged around the big buttress roots of a rosewood tree. I stopped when I heard a distant voice. Straining to listen, I heard Leaf calling for me. I would have ignored him. Playing was more fun than collecting leaves. But I thought he said something about an ylang-ylang tree. Mother would bake us star fruit pies if we brought her ylang-ylang flowers for her perfumes.
Coming, I shouted, jumping down to the jungle floor.
When I turned to wave goodbye to the little Valmer, it startled and dashed high up into the rosewood tree. A feeling of unease settled over me like a mist. I searched the nearby branches, looking for necklace snakes, the main predator of Valmers. With my gaze focused on the tree canopy, I almost tripped over a man.
I jumped back in surprise.
He sat on the ground with his right leg splayed out and the other tucked in close. His hands gripped his left ankle. Torn and stained with dirt and sweat, his clothing hung in tatters. Leaves and tendrils clung to his black hair.
The adult part of my mind screamed,
Mogkin, run!
But my young self remained unafraid.
Thank fate, Mogkin cried as relief smoothed the worry from his face.
I'm lost. I think I broke my ankle. Can you help?
I nodded.
I'll go get my brother. Wait, just help me up first.
Why?
To see if I can walk. If my ankle is really broken, you'll have to get more help.
My adult consciousness knew he lied, but I couldn't prevent my child self from stepping closer. I reached out a hand. He grasped it, then yanked me down.
In one swift motion, he grabbed me and muffled my cry with a damp cloth.
He pressed it tight against my mouth, forcing a sweet aroma into my nose.
The jungle spun around me.
Stay awake! Stay awake! I yelled to my body, but the blackness crept closer.
Struggling in Mogkin's arms, my adult self knew what would happen next. Mogkin would take me to Ixia, and I would be raised in the orphanage of Rayad's father, General Brazel, so when I reached maturity they could try to take the magic out of me as if milking a cow. Also, Mogkin could increase his magical powers and help Brazel take over control of Commander Ambrose and Ixia. Even knowing the ending didn't make me feel any better about my abduction. Leaf's face in the bushes was the last thing my young self saw before the darkness claimed me. And that was truly horrifying. The vision faded. I stood with Moonman on a dark plain.
Did Leaf really see what happened to me?
I asked Storyweaver.
Yes.
Why didn't he tell our parents?
They could have sent a rescue party or tried to get me back. Better for them to know their child's fate than to guess and wonder for years. As I thought about Leaf, my resentment grew. He had robbed me of the chance to have a childhood, to have a bedroom and loving parents, to learn about the jungle with my father and distill perfumes with my mother, to swing through the trees with Nutty, and to play games instead of memorizing Ixia's code of behavior.
Why?
I demanded.
That is a question you must ask him.
I shook my head. He must have hated me. He was glad to see me kidnapped.
That explains his anger when I returned to Citya. Moonman said,
Hate and anger are some of the emotions that strangle your brother, but not all. The easy answer is never the right answer. You must untangle your brother before he chokes himself.
I thought about Leaf. He had helped me with Tula, but he could have lied when he told me why, just like he had lied to our parents for 14 years. My interactions with him since my return to Citya had almost all been unpleasant. And the single memory I now owned of Leaf before my time in Ixia made my blood boil with fury.
Perhaps if I had more memories of my childhood. Why can't I remember my life before Mogkin kidnapped me? I asked.
Mogkin used magic to suppress all your memories, so you would believe him and stay in the orphanage.
That made sense.
If I had remembered a family, I would have tried to run away.
Do you want those memories back?
He asked.
Yes.
Promise you will help your brother, and I will unlock them.
I considered his offer.
How do I help him?
You will find a way.
Cryptic, aren't we? He smiled.
The fun part of my job.
What if I refuse to help him?
That is your decision.
I huffed in frustration.
Why do you care?
He sought relief from his pain in the Avibian Plains. He tried to kill himself. His need for help drew me to him. I offered my services, but fear twisted his heart and he refused. His pain reaches me still. A job unfinished. A soul lost. While there's time left, I will do what I can even if I have to bargain with a soul finder.
Chapter 21
Soul Finder?
Fear brushed up my spine.
Why do I keep hearing that name? I asked Storyweaver. We still stood on the featureless expanse,
not unlike the surface of a frozen pond.
Because you are one, he said in a plain, matter-of-fact tone.
No,
I protested, remembering the loathing and horror that had crossed Hayes's face when he had first mentioned that title to me. He had talked about waking the dead.
I will show you.
The smooth plain under our feet turned transparent, and through it I saw my Ixian friend, Janko. His pale face grimaced in pain as his blood gushed from the sword lodged in his stomach. The scene switched to Commander Ambrose lying motionless on a bed, his eyes vacant. Then I saw my own face as I stood over an unconscious General Brazel. My green eyes took on a sudden intensity as if I'd had an epiphany. A brief image of Fisk, the beggar boy, carrying packages and smiling. Then a picture of Tula, lying broken on her bed. The images faded as the ground returned.
You have found 5 souls already, Moonman said.
But they weren't...
dead?
I nodded.
Do you know what a soul finder is?
He asked.
They wake the dead?
When he raised an eyebrow without commenting, I said,
No, I don't.
You need to learn.
And telling me would be too easy,
right?
takes all the fun out of being a mysterious story weaver. He grinned.
What about my bargain? Childhood memories for your help with Leaf.
Just hearing his name sent waves of anger through my body. My reasons for coming to Cydia had been so simple. First, for survival, fleeing the commander's order of execution. Second had been to learn how to use my magic and meet my family. Perhaps along the way I might develop a kinship with this southern world. Or perhaps not. My plans had seemed straightforward, then my road kept dipping and turning, and I kept getting caught in its traps. Now I felt mired in mud in the middle of nowhere. Lost.
Your path is clear, said Moonman. You need to find it.
And the best way to find something you had lost was to return to the last place you remembered having it. In my case, I needed to start at the very beginning. I promise to try to help Leaf, I said. Smells and softness flooded my mind as memories of my childhood came to life. Appleberry perfume mixed with the musky scent of earth. Laughter and the pure joy of swinging through the air followed an argument with Leaf over the last mango. Playing hide-and-seek with Leaf and Nutty, crouching on branches to ambush Nutty's brothers during a mock battle. The sharp sting of hazelnuts on my bare arms as her brothers discovered our hiding spot, launching an attack. The slap of mud as our clan leader dug a grave for my grandfather. The sound of my mother's soothing voice as she sang me a lullaby. The lessons with Esau on different species of leaves and their medicinal properties. All the happiness, sadness, pain, fear, and thrills of childhood came rushing back. I knew some would fade with time, but others would stay with me forever.
Thank you, I said.
Storyweaver inclined his head.
He held out a hand, and I grasped it.
The dark plain faded and shapes grew from the ground. Colors returned as the sun's first light crested the horizon. I blinked, trying to orient myself.
The clearing where I had left Kiki and Leaf had changed.
Large circular tents ringed a huge fire pit.
Brown animal shapes had been painted on the white canvas of the tents. Dark-skinned people milled about the roaring fire.
Some cooked, while others tended children.
Some wore clothes, while others wore nothing.
The clothes were all made of white cotton.
The women wore either sleeveless dresses that reached to their knees, or a tunic and short pants like the men.
Near the fire, Iris and Cahill sat cross-legged with two older men and a woman.
They were intent on their discussion and didn't see me.
I couldn't spot Lee for his horse, but Kiki stood next to one of the tents. A woman wearing short pants groomed her. Her brown hair bobbed to her neck. I jumped when I realized Moonman no longer stood beside me.
In fact, I couldn't see him anywhere in the small village.
Perhaps he'd gone into one of the tents.
Not wanting to interrupt Iris, I checked on Kiki.
She wickered at me in greeting.
The woman stopped brushing the dust off her coat. She studied me in silence. Who's this? I asked Kiki.
Mother.
Is this your horse? The woman asked.
The inflection in her voice rose and fell with each word, and there was a slight pause between them. I reviewed Iris's lecture about the sand seeds from the night before.
The woman had spoken first, so I guessed it would be all right to answer her. I'm hers.
She snorted a short laugh through her nose.
I raised her, taught her, and sent her on her journey. It's a pleasure to see her again.
She kicked at her saddle on the ground.
She doesn't need this. She will float under you like a gust of wind.
That's for me.
And for our supplies. Another huff of amusement.
She finished brushing her. Kiki turned her blue eyes toward her, and understanding flashed on the woman's face. She whooped and jumped up on Kiki's back. Have fun, I told Kiki, as she raced through the tall grass.
Is that wise? Cahill asked.
He watched Kiki disappear over a hill.
What if that woman doesn't come back?
I don't care if she comes back or not. I shrugged, looking past Cahill.
Iris and the three sand seeds stood next to the fire.
They were still in deep conversation.
One of the men gestured in what appeared to be anger.
You don't care if she steals Kiki?
Instead of trying to educate Cahill on my relationship with Kiki, I searched his face. Tension had pulled his eyes into an intent expression. His gaze darted around the campsite as if he expected to be attacked.
What's been going on? I asked him, tilting my head toward Iris. Last night we made camp and waited for you and Leaf. I worried when you failed to catch up, but Iris seemed amused. Then this group of sand seeds arrived at our site. These are the clan leaders. They travel from village to village, settling disputes, bringing news and goods. It's very convenient that they found us. I think they're hiding something.
Cahill's frown reminded me of my brother. Where's Leaf? Worry lined his face.
They said he went back to the keep. Why would he do that?
Because he too felt afraid. But, I said, he probably wanted to get the red soil samples to Bane. Cahill appeared unconvinced. Before I could ask more questions, Iris ended her conversation and moved to join us.
They're upset, she said.
Why? I asked.
They think we're accusing them of giving the curare to Tula's attacker, and Cahill's attempts to recruit them to his cause have inflamed them.
Iris scowled at Cahill.
I thought you wanted to come along so you could see another part of our culture. Your selfish obsession to raise an army has jeopardized our mission.
Cahill didn't look remorseful.
I wouldn't have to raise an army if the council supported me.
You, silence!
Iris sliced her hand through the air, and I felt a brush of magic. Bright red blotches grew on Cahill's cheeks as he tried to speak.
Despite all my diplomatic training, I can't get them to tell me anything. Cahill has offended them. They will now talk only to you, Yelena.
Should we plan our escape route now? I asked.
She laughed. We'll push Cahill into their path to slow them down.
Cahill shot Iris a venomous glare.
You have a slight advantage, Yelena, she said. I might be a master magician and member of the council, but you're a blood relative. In their eyes, a relative is more important than a master.
Iris shook her head in frustration. Relative? I asked.
About 500 years ago, a group of sand seeds decided to move into the jungle. The sand seeds are wanderers by nature, and there have been many groups that have broken from the main clan to find their own way. Most don't stay in communication with the main clan, but some, like the Zaltanas, do. Just try and discover some information without implying that these sand seeds are involved. Choose your words carefully.
Iris must have read the skepticism on my face because she added,
Consider it your first lesson in diplomacy.
Seeing how well you did with them, I'm surprised that I don't feel more confident.
Avoid sarcasm.
How about coming with me? So when I start to say something stupid, you can wave your hand and silence me, too. A sardonic smile flashed on her face.
I've been asked to leave and to take that annoying puppy with me. You're on your own. I won't be able to reach your mind through this bubble of sand seed magic, so we'll meet you at the edge of the Avibian Plains next to Blood Rock.
Iris formed an image in my mind of that white-veined structure that Kiki and I had passed 2 days ago. Cahill waved his arms and tapped his throat. Iris sighed again.
Only if you promise not to talk about armies until we're back at the Citadel.
He nodded.
Yelena. I'll let you release his voice, she said.
Another lesson. I calmed the nervous thoughts about my meeting with the elders before I opened my mind to the magic. Magical energy pulsed all around me, but I saw a thin thread of power wrapped around Cahill's throat. Pulling the power to me, I unlocked his voice.
Well done, Iris said.
Cahill's ears were still bright red, but he had the sense to speak in an even tone.
If I may point out the obvious, he said, leaving Yelena alone is dangerous.
I don't have a choice, Iris said. I could force them to tell me what they know, but the sand seeds would consider that an act of war. Then you'll never get your army, Cahill, because we'll be too busy trying to prevent the sand seeds from taking a blood vengeance from everyone in Citya.
She turned to me.
Yelena, good luck. We'll have a lot to discuss when you catch up with us. Cahill, go saddle Topaz.
Iris strode away, whistling for her horse.
A stubborn expression gripped Cahill's face, and he crossed his arms over his chest.
I should stay. Someone needs to watch your back. Basic military tactics. Always have a partner.
Cahill, there is so much magic in the air around here that the sand seeds could close my windpipe, and there isn't a damn thing you or I could do about it.
Then come with us.
What about Tula or the killer's next victim? I have to try.
But the risk.
Living is a risk, I snapped at him. Every decision, every interaction, every step, every time you get out of bed in the morning, you take a risk. To survive is to know you're taking that risk and to not get out of bed clutching illusions of safety.
Your view of life doesn't sound comforting.
It's not supposed to. That's the whole point. Before Cahill could launch into a discussion on philosophy, I tried to shoo him away. Get going before Iris loses her patience with you again. I swept my hand through the air as Iris had done.
He grabbed my wrist.
No, you don't.
He held my hand for a moment.
If the sand seeds hurt you, they'll see some of my blood vengeance. Be careful.
I pulled my hand away. Always.
All those worried thoughts about offending the sand seeds came flooding back as I watched Iris and Cahill ride away.
I reviewed Iris's last-minute instructions about dealing with the clan elders. I glanced around, wondering what I should do.
The sand seeds worked in their temporary village with a calm efficiency.
My hunger flared when I caught a whiff of roasting meat, and I realized I hadn't eaten since we had stopped for lunch the day before.
I laid my pack next to Kiki's saddle and rummaged for something to eat, but sitting down proved to be a bad decision as exhaustion pulled at my body. I let my new memories of childhood circle in my mind, and I contented myself with reliving some of them.
Using the saddle as a pillow, I stretched out on the grass, not bothering to spread my cloak. Strange that I felt so safe here.
But I wasn't safe from my nightmares.
Hunted by a slithering mass of snakes, I scrambled through the jungle.
They wrapped around my ankles, yanking me down.
Unable to move, they sank fangs, dripping with curare, deep into my flesh.
Come with us, the snakes hissed.
Cousin?
A timid voice asked. I awoke with a loud cry. A petite woman with large eyes stepped back in alarm.
Her brown hair was streaked with yellow and tied back with a leather cord. Stains lined the white fabric of her dress.
The elders will see you now.
I peered at the sky, but sheets of clouds obscured the sun.
How long was I asleep?
The woman smiled.
All day. Follow me, please.
I looked at my bow, knowing it would be an insult to bring it, yet wanting it anyway. With reluctance, I left it on the ground and followed the woman. Questions swirled in my mind as we passed the tents, but I bit my lip to prevent myself from voicing them.
Wait, wait, I thought, quelling my impatience.
Unfortunately, diplomacy was a dance I needed to learn. The woman stopped at the largest tent. The animal patterns almost covered the white fabric. She swept back a panel and gestured for me to enter. I stepped into the tent, waiting in the muted light for my eyes to adjust.
You may approach, said a male voice from the far side of the tent.
I surveyed the interior as I crossed to the back. Maroon and tan rugs woven with intricate geometric patterns covered the floor of the round tent. I spotted some sleeping mats and colorful pillows on the left. Bigger pillows on the right surrounded a low table, and candle holders with long red tassels hung from the ceiling. Sitting cross-legged in a row on an ebony and gold mat were two men and a woman. One I recognized. Moon Man smiled at me from between the man and woman. His skin was now painted yellow. Wrinkles creased the face of the other man, and the woman's hair was peppered with gray. Both wore red robes.
I halted in shock as the sudden image of my red prison robe, tattered and bloody, rose in my mind. I hadn't thought of that garment since Valak offered me the option of being executed or becoming the commander's food taster. I had cast it aside and accepted the Ixion uniform without a backward glance. Odd that I should think of it now. Or had Storyweaver pulled those thoughts from my mind? I peered at Moonman with suspicion. "Sit," said the woman. She gestured to a small, round rug on the floor in front of them. I settled into the same position as my hosts.
"A Zoltana who has traveled far. You have returned to your ancestors to seek guidance," the man said. His dark eyes brimmed with knowledge, and his gaze pierced my soul.
"I seek understanding," I said.
"Your journey has twisted and bent. Your journey has stained you with blood and pain and death. You must be cleansed."
The man nodded to Storyweaver. Moonman rose. From under the mat, he pulled a scimitar. The sharp edge of the long blade gleamed in the candlelight. Chapter 22. Moonman advanced. He rested the curved blade of the scimitar on my left shoulder, with the sharp edge dangerously close to my neck.
"Are you ready to be cleansed?" he asked.
My throat tightened.
"What? How?"
My mouth stumbled over the words. All logic fled.
"We take the stains of blood, pain, and death from you. We take your blood and cause you pain. You will atone for your misdeeds with your eventual death and be welcomed into the sky."
One word cut through the jumble of fear in my mind. Sudden clarity focused my thoughts. I stood with deliberate care, trying not to jostle the weapon, and stepped back. The blade remained poised in midair. "I have no misdeeds to atone for. I hold no remorse for my past actions, and therefore do not need to be cleansed." I braced for their reaction. Diplomacy be damned. Moonman grinned, and the two elders nodded in approval. Confused, I watched him replace the scimitar under the mat and settled back into his position.
"That is the correct response," he said.
"What if I had agreed?"
"Then we would have sent you away with only a few cryptic remarks to puzzle over." He laughed. "I must admit, I am slightly disappointed. I worked all afternoon on those remarks."
"Sit," the woman ordered. "What do you seek to understand?" I chose my words with great care as I sat on the mat. "A beast has been preying on young women throughout Citya. To date, he has killed 10 and injured 1. I want to stop him. I seek to understand who he is."
"Why come to us?" the woman asked.
"He has been using a certain substance as a weapon. I'm concerned that he might have stolen it from one of your clan members." I waited, hoping the word "stolen" would not imply guilt.
"Ah, yes, this substance," the old man said. "A blessing and a curse. A package from Isa Liana Sanseed Zoltana arrived at one of our villages near the Davian Plateau. That village was raided soon after, by the Davian vermin." The old man spat on the dirt floor. "Many things were stolen in that raid."
His scorn for these vermin was obvious, but I asked anyway, "Who are these vermin?" The elders tightened their jaws, refusing to reply. Frowning, Moonman explained them to me.
"They are young men and women who have rebelled against our traditions. They have broken from the clan and settled on the plateau. The plateau does not give up its bounty without a fight. The vermin prefer to steal from us rather than work to grow their own food."
"Could one of them be the monster I seek?"
"Yes. They have perverted our art of magic weaving. Instead of benefiting the clan, they seek to increase their power, enriching only themselves. Most of them do not have the gift, but there are a few who are very powerful."
Moonman's fierce expression gave me a mental image of how he would look when swinging his scimitar in battle. I held a picture of Ferda, Tula's attacker, in my mind.
Is he one of them? I asked.
Moonman's magic coursed through me.
Moonman grunted, then growled deep in his throat. Looking at the elder man, he said,
They are practicing the old evil. We must stop them.
Horrified, the man replied,
We will try again to pierce their magic screen.
We will find them.
He stood with grace and dignity, bowed once to me, then gestured to the woman.
Come, we must make plans.
They left the tent. Moonman and I remained.
The old evil? I asked.
An ancient horrible ritual of binding a victim soul to you, then killing him. When the victim dies, his magic flows into you, increasing your strength. The red markings on that beast are part of the ritual.
Moonman's brow furrowed for a moment before his eyes widened with concern.
You said one woman was injured. Where is she now?
In the magician's keep.
Guarded?
Yes. Why?
The one you seek will not be in the Davian Plateau. He will be in the keep, waiting for another chance to take her life. He cannot bind another soul until she dies.
I must go back. I jumped up from the small mat intent on leaving.
Moonman grabbed my shoulder and turned me to face him.
Do not forget your promise.
I won't. Tula first, then Leaf.
He nodded.
May I ask another favor?
I hesitated.
At least he didn't want a promise.
You can ask.
When your training with Master Iris is complete, will you return to me so I may teach you the magical arts of the Sand Seeds? It is part of your heritage, and of your blood.
The proposition sounded appealing, but would be yet another curve in my journey. At this rate, I doubted I would even finish my training.
If history served as guidance, my future tended to go in unanticipated directions. I will try.
Good. Now go.
He bowed to me, then shooed me from the tent.
A frenzy of activity encompassed the camp.
Dismantled tents littered the ground as the clan members prepared to leave.
Twilight crept closer as I searched for my pack.
I found Kiki instead. She was saddled and ready to go. Her short-haired mother offered her reins to me. As I took the leather straps, she said,
Do not sit on the saddle. Crouch over it and shift your weight forward,
and she will fly home for you.
Thank you.
I bowed.
She smiled. You are well matched.
I am pleased.
With a final pat to Kiki's neck, the woman turned to join the clan in their packing efforts. I mounted Kiki and tried to follow her directions.
We would lose the light soon.